Thank you, Eva. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone, actually, I should say, and welcome to the presentation of Umicore's results for the first half of this year. I will talk about the overall business evolution during the first half of the year, and will also update you on the outlook for the full year. Then I will hand over to Filip, our CFO, who will cover the financials. After that, I will wrap up before handing the call over to you for any questions that you might have. If we look at the overview in the first place, we can see that overall revenues were slightly down year-on-year. The reason behind the decrease was the effect of lower metal prices and currency headwinds. On the other hand, volumes grew nicely in automotive catalyst and rechargeable battery materials in particular, and that has offset almost entirely the negative metal and currency effects on revenues. Metal prices do not impact revenues only. As you know, they also have an impact on the profitability of our various recycling activities, and this was one of the main reasons for a lower recurring EBIT in the first half of this year, next to unfavorable exchange rates and, to a lesser extent, higher depreciation charges. On the other hand, we have seen some clear benefits coming through from the difficult but necessary cost reduction efforts that we have made over the past 18 months, most notably in Performance Materials. Our Vision 2015 investment programs remain very much on track, and I will elaborate on the projects in a moment. Filip will comment on the financials later on in more detail. Suffice to say for now that our financial position remains very strong. Once again, we generated solid cash flows, and we were able to return more than 100 million euro of cash to shareholders in the form of share buybacks and dividend payments. Our share buyback program is nearing completion, and the board has now come to the conclusion that some 8 million of the shares we currently own could be cancelled. This cancellation will, of course, be submitted to the approval of the shareholders in the coming weeks. In the meantime, an interim dividend of 50 euro cents will be paid out, which is consistent with our dividend policy. The profit outlook for the full year is in line with the guidance that I provided back at the end of April, although I should specify today that it is becoming more likely that we will end up in the upper half of the recurring EBIT range of 250 to 280 million euro, assuming that metal prices stay more or less where they are today. We see some positive developments on the demand side in several of our product businesses, and as anticipated, the effects of cost reduction measures have started to percolate to the bottom line. In terms of revenue generation, I mentioned that metal prices and currency exchange rates provided significant headwinds in comparison to the first half of 2013. The good news, though, is that we saw some good volume growth in several product businesses, such as automotive catalysts or across the energy materials division. From a profitability point, the same metal price and currency effects were by far the main reasons behind recurring EBITDA decreasing 8% year-on-year. As we indicated back in April, we also processed somewhat lower volumes in recycling, mainly due to the work being done in Hoboken to prepare for the expansion. In the product businesses, EBITDA improved as a result of volume growth, although some of that growth effect on EBITDA was dented by increasing price pressure, and we started to see the effects of recent cost reduction measures. Compared to EBITDA, recurring EBIT was down a bit more in percentage terms due to an increase in depreciation charges as a result of new growth investments coming on stream. If we look a bit more closely on the investments, you will see that capital expenditures were 72 million euro in the first half. The execution of our growth strategy is on track, although CapEx was on the low side in the first half compared to prior years, which is due to the timing of certain large projects. You should expect a higher level of CapEx in the second half, driven by the expansion in Hoboken and the ongoing growth projects in automotive catalysts and rechargeable battery materials. R&D spending, on the other side, was stable, both in absolute value and as a percentage of revenues, and the focus of our R&D programs is also very much unchanged. The number of employees increased a little since the end of last year, following the acquisition of Palm Commodities and the completion or the ramp-up of certain new production facilities in automotive catalysts in particular. In terms of safety, the number of lost time accidents was a bit lower, but very sadly, this was completely overshadowed by the tragic accident which cost the lives of two of our employees in Olen in Belgium back in January. Our ambition to make Umicore a safe place to work remains unabated, and in the meanwhile, we have reinforced the emphasis on process safety. Let's take a look at each of the business groups in turn, starting with catalysis. Revenues in catalysis were up slightly. In automotive catalysts, revenues followed a trend that was close to that of global automotive production, which itself was up by some 4% in the first half. We recorded once again strong growth in China, where we continue to benefit from the successful market penetration of international brands. In other regions, the picture was subdued. In Europe and North America, revenues were flat in a recovering market, which reflects a rather unsupportive platform mix. The good news, though, is that most of that effect is of a temporary nature. In Europe in particular, where new Euro 6 light-duty diesel contracts will kick in soon and help us to somewhat rebalance the mix. It is also worth noting that we continue to win market share with Japanese OEMs globally. In the second half of this year, the ramp-up of the HDD business and the new Euro 6 light-duty contracts should start to contribute to both the top and the bottom line. In precious metals chemistry, revenues were lower year-on-year, and the contribution to recurring EBIT much lower, which unfortunately did offset the improvements achieved in automotive catalysts. The business unit faced indeed degrading market conditions and was affected by the weakness of the Brazilian economy and, in particular, the automotive-related demand. You can see on slide 10 that we still have a significant wave of investments underway in automotive catalysts across the globe. While we start ramping up the first two HDD lines in Florange, we are installing a third line, which is due to be commissioned at year-end. We are also ramping up HDD production in China, and the new plant in India for light-duty applications will be commissioned towards the end of this year. More recently, we announced two new investment projects for automotive catalysts. Firstly, the growing demand for Euro 6 light and heavy-duty applications will require Umicore to add capacity in Europe, and we have therefore decided to build a new plant in Nowa Ruda in the southern part of Poland. The new capacity should come on stream in the first part of 2016. Secondly, together with our joint venture partners, we have decided to build a new tech center in Korea, which will help grow in complexity with our Korean customers. In precious metals chemistry, we have completed the move of our U.S. operations to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and are also expanding the capacity for MOCVD precursors at the Hanau site in Germany. In energy materials, higher sales volumes across businesses and the acquisition of Palm Commodities were the main engines for the 12% revenue growth. The growth was most pronounced in rechargeable battery materials, which continues to benefit from a strong demand for high energy density cathode materials used in high and portable electronics such as tablets and smartphones. These cathodes are typically made of lithium cobalt oxide. If we look at NMC compounds, on the other hand, sales were lower year on year due to the declining demand for notebook PCs. That is a segment which typically relies on standard grade and lower margin products and has therefore diminishing attraction to Umicore. The demand for higher end NMCs used in automotive applications increased, as more electrified vehicle platforms get introduced in the market and as the sales of previously introduced models are gradually increasing. In the cobalt and specialty materials business, revenues were higher following the acquisition of pulp commodities. The revenues of thin film products were boosted by a pickup in demand for rotary ITO targets used in the production of flat panel displays. In electro-optic materials, revenues increased too, as a result in particular of higher demand for finished optics used in commercial applications, and the contribution from germanium recycling and refining activities was also higher. After a long period of inactivity, not to say near death, it was also encouraging to see orders coming in for substrates for use in concentrator photovoltaics. Overall, the profitability of the business group continues to recover from the lows seen in 2012. This is due to improving demand as well as the cost reductions that have been made in the electro-optic materials and thin film product businesses. Price pressure continues to be a factor across units and may affect unit margins further in the second half, while I expect market demand to continue to be supportive. As you can see on slide 12, we have been busy adding capacity in the rechargeable battery materials operations in Korea and China, and the new precursor plant in Korea is now in trial phase. In cobalt and specialty materials, we are working on an upgrade and expansion of the fine cobalt powders production in Olen, Belgium, an investment that should be operational next year. In thin film products, we have just entered into a joint venture agreement in China with First Rare Materials, a company that operates under the brand name of Vital and which has leading positions in minor metals. The JV, which will be 60% owned by Umicore, will invest in fully-fledged capabilities to produce rotary indium tin oxide targets and recycle spent targets. As the market for large area displays is growing fast in Asia and in China in particular, the JV will be well positioned to serve the industry with best available rotary technology. In performance materials, revenues were down 4% compared to the same period last year, while recurring EBIT improved by 16% as a result of cost reductions. In building products, revenues were higher. Demand in Europe was well ahead of last year, in large part due to the mild winter conditions, which allowed an unusually high level of construction activity in the region during the first quarter. In contrast, orders from overseas markets were lower year on year. In chemicals, revenues were stable, reflecting good volumes and higher premiums in several applications. Recycling margins, however, were lower due to a continued tightness on the zinc residue market. Both zinc-related units have generated higher earnings as a result of the cost reduction measures that we have implemented in recent months. In the precious metals-related activities, revenues were down year on year. This is due to a combination of factors such as lower metal prices, silver in particular, and the economic slowdown in Brazil. The contribution of Element 6 abrasives was much higher compared to the first half of last year, as sales volumes were up after the introduction of the successful introduction of innovative products, which helped the business gain market shares. Also in Element 6 abrasives, earnings started to benefit from recent cost reduction measures. Further adjustments to the production configuration of Element 6 abrasives have been announced, with the intended discontinuation of production in Sweden and the consolidation of production activities in South Africa and Ireland. In building products, the new production facility for surface treatment in Vivier opened in June, and production is ramping up as we speak. Other investments in performance materials include the capacity expansion for zinc powders in Malaysia, which is now on stream, and the construction of a new zinc powder plant in Changsha in China, which has just started. We have also set up a new joint venture in China to expand our business presence in the electroplating market locally. Umicore will own a majority stake in that joint venture. The recycling business group, as anticipated, bore the brunt of the impact of lower metal prices, which was the main reason for revenues and recurring EBIT to decrease by 13 and 34% respectively. As we indicated at the time of the first quarter update, the available capacity in Hoboken was somewhat constrained in the first part of the year due to the engineering and testing work that we carried out as a preparation for the expansion project. As a result, we processed lower volumes than in the first half of 2013. We have also seen some minor changes to the supply mix, with lower availability of certain PGM-rich industrial byproducts, for instance, or certain types of complex e-scrap. Facility was shut down during the past several weeks for maintenance, and as we have received the permit for the expansion, which is of course good news, we have made use of the downtime to start some of the investment work related to the expansion. This will cause CapEx to be higher in the second half of the year. It now remains to be seen how the facility will perform once it restarts. Our assumption today in that respect is that the modifications we are bringing to the flow sheet should improve throughput in the short term, and if that is confirmed, we should be able to make up for the downtime in the remainder of the year volume-wise. Lower metal prices, gold and silver in particular, also caused a much reduced availability of recycling residues for the jewelry and industrial metals business unit. This effect was partly compensated by higher sales of products for industrial use or for high-end jewelry. I expect the performance of the business group overall in the second half of the year to be broadly of the same magnitude as in the first half. This is subject, of course, to how the Hoboken facility performs after we restart it, and assuming, of course, no material move in metal prices. I should be able to tell you more about this at the time of the third quarter update, end of October. After catalysis, recycling is the division where we are investing the most in terms of capital expenditure. The lion's share of these projects is happening at the Hoboken plant, and as I indicated a minute ago, we have now started to work on the 100 million euro expansion project. We're also investing elsewhere in the division, for example, in the expansion of our silver refining and recycling capabilities in Thailand, Brazil, and Germany. At this stage, I would like to hand over to Philippe, who will comment on the financials.
Thank you, Mark, and good afternoon, everybody. I propose to first look at our cash flows. Our recurring EBITDA over the first 6 months was 8% lower than in the same period of last year. This 8% compares to the 15% lower recurring EBIT, which includes the impact of our higher depreciation charges. And year on year, our depreciation charges increased by some 7%, obviously as a result of our recent growth investments. Compared to the second half of last year, our recurring EBITDA was actually stable. And year on year, our recurring EBITDA, excluding the recycling segment, increased by 13%. This is, again, an indication of the improvement in most of the units outside of recycling. Despite the lower EBITDA, our free cash flow before financing over the period, and this is, as you know, after investments, after CapEx and changes in working capital needs, was higher than in preceding semesters. This was due, on the one hand, we had a continuous optimization of our working capital base, and on the other hand, we had a rather slow CapEx spending in the first half of the year. The latter is merely a timing effect, and we expect CapEx spending to ramp up as we continue the year. We currently anticipate CapEx spending of between 220 to 250 million euros for the full year. As mentioned by Mark, the majority of these investments are in catalysis and in recycling. On the working capital side, we also expect to see an increase in the working capital in the second half of this year. This high free operational cash flow of the first 6 months allowed us to keep our net financial debt stable and actually even reducing it by 13 million since December of last year. This change incorporates more than 100 million euros of cash returned to shareholders in the form of dividends and share buybacks, which the 100 million corresponds to half of our cash flow from operations of the period. This confirms again our commitment towards shareholder value creation, even in a period of metal price headwinds. The tax cash out over the period amounted to 28 million euros, and our net interest charge was negligible. Needless to say that our capital structure remains very strong, notwithstanding the sizable investments and the cash returns. Our average net debt is half our recurring EBITDA, and our net gearing ratio stays below 11%. We took the opportunity over the period to further reduce our weighted average net interest rate, still below 1.3% and still at a historic low. Moving to the next slide on earnings per share. Our 15% lower earnings per share reflects the decline in EBIT. The P&L tax charge for the period equally decreased in line with the operating income and corresponds now to recurring effective tax rate of 22%. The financial result was somewhat lower than in the comparable period last year, and this is mainly due to adverse financial Forex results. Our board of directors has approved an interim dividend of half a euro per share to be paid out on the 4th of September, and which accounts for a payout ratio of well over 50% compared to the previous recurring EPS. In the first six months of this year, we bought back some 1.5 million own shares, or 1.3% of our total outstanding shares. We currently hold 11.4 million treasury shares, which brings us very close to the 10% buyback mandate limit. In view of our excellent capital structure and strong cash flows, the board has decided to propose to shareholders the cancellation of 8 million treasury shares. As you know, we earmark parts of our treasury shares to cover the stock option plans. Finally, a word on our non-recurring EBIT, which amounts to a loss of 9 million euros, 9.4 million euros over the period, which compares to a loss of 22.8 million last year over the same first six months. Restructuring charges made up 11 million euros and are linked to, on the one hand, the closure of the Swedish production plant of our joint venture, Element Six Abrasives, that is reported in Performance Materials. On the other hand, some further cost reduction measures in Energy Materials. These charges are compensated to the amount of 6 million euros by the reversal of past metal inventory impairments, and this in response to higher pricing of certain metals. This concludes the financial section. Marc, I hand it back over to you for the wrap-up.
Thank you, Filip. Before turning to your questions, I would like to wrap up the key messages of this presentation. Revenues were slightly down despite good volume growth in the product businesses, and that is the result of significant metal price and currency headwinds. These headwinds have also affected the overall profitability of the group in the first half, as anticipated, although cost reductions helped us mitigate their effect to some extent. The next message is that the execution of our strategic growth programs remains well on track, and CapEx will be higher in the second half of the year as a number of key projects in Recycling, Catalysis, and Energy Materials have been launched. At the same time, we continue our efforts to improve the cost structure and working capital management in order to restore margins where needed. Finally, the outlook for the full year remains consistent with the guidance we gave back in April, although, as I mentioned earlier, it is becoming more likely now that we would end up in the upper half of the range of 250 million-280 million euro recurring EBIT. I should be able to say more about that at the time of the third quarter update, as some of the uncertainties, by definition, should be lifted by then, such as the performance of the Hoboken facility and the evolution of metal price. With this, I would now like to open the floor to your questions.
Thank you. To ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function has been switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star one to ask a question. We will now take our first question from Mutlu Gundogan of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. I have four questions. The first is on the outlook. Can you tell us what the main drivers of increasing your guidance to the upper range? Are those higher metal prices, or should we think about something else? Secondly is about recycling. Can you share with us what your assumptions are that results in earnings in the second half will be equal to the first half? And I'm particularly interested in your available capacity and throughput expectations. Then thirdly, on automotive catalysts, I remember that in the second half of 2013, your earnings were lower, partly due to startup costs for HDD. Can you tell us whether you still had these costs in the first half and how they compare to the costs in the second half? And then finally, on building products, there's a remark on the final page in which you talk about the statement of objectives of the French Competition Authority. Can you tell us what these allegations are and why do you dispute those? And also, can you tell us whether you have already provisioned for this? And if yes, what the amount is? Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, Mutlu. Let me start with the guidance upgrade or fine-tuning, whatever you you would call it. It is partly indeed a result of the slight upturn that we have seen in metal prices recently. I mean, upturn is not applicable to all metal prices. Some of them have not started to react yet, I would say, to better economic news. But at least the trend of unfavorable or the trend of unfavorable currency and metal price moves seems to be broken, and so there is a little bit of an impact of metal price assumptions in the guidance upgrade. The rest, I would say, is the confirmation of the positive developments that we see in the demand and sales trends in our product businesses. Of course, when we communicated the earnings guidance back in April, we didn't have the visibility that we have today, by definition, as time has passed. We have had, in the meantime, the confirmation that of some of these positive trends in terms of demand. And so that, combined with the metal price effect, allows us to be somewhat more optimistic and guiding toward the upper end or the upper half of the range today. Now let me move to your question about recycling. So what we exactly mean by the remark that were made a minute ago is that since we have a fairly prolonged shutdown for the time being because we carry out not only maintenance work but also a number of modifications to the facility as part of the expansion investment project, we believe that, or we assume at this point in time, or we anticipate that the throughput as a result of these modifications will improve already after we restart the facility, I mean after a certain ramp-up period, of course, and fine-tuning, and will provide us with a little bit more available capacity so that we can make up for the downtime and basically match the performance of the first half in terms of volumes and in terms of revenues. So this is the assumption today. I cannot tell you more because I have to see how the facility restarts, how it performs after the restart, whether the modifications we have made do deliver the benefits they were supposed to deliver, and then we will know whether the assumption made today is justified or not, and that's why I mentioned that a further update should be expected at the end of October as part of the Q3 trading update. And of course, that assumes that the metal prices do not fundamentally move compared to where they are today, because that's the other element which has an impact on the revenue and the profitability of the recycling activity. Coming to your question regarding AC, yes, we continue to have startup costs related to new production lines in automotive catalyst and qualification costs for new lines coming on stream. As we continue to install capacity with a third HDD line now coming up, plus the plant in India, plus the other investments that I have mentioned, you will continue to have those. The difference is that with the ramp-up of HDD and some new Euro 6 passenger car diesel contract, the contribution of these investments will start to be visible in terms of top line and bottom line, and that will, of course, I mean, that contribution will help offset some of these continued costs. And then finally, let me address your questions regarding building products and the statement of objections that we received from the French competition authorities. Just to be clear, it does not relate to any price fixing, so there is no price fixing allegation. It only relates to practices that we have with our distribution network, and the fact that these practices are deemed to be inappropriate by the French competition authority because they consider we have a dominant position in the market, while actually we have less than 2% market share in France. So we believe this is totally unfounded. What is the difference of opinion based on? The French authority considers that the relevant market is the market of zinc roofing products, which is not a market in itself. And while we consider, in line with European jurisprudence and also case law in Germany, that the market is the market of building materials for roofing and for rainwater systems. We do not compete with other zinc materials. We compete also with copper, with PVC, tiles, and all kinds of materials that are used exactly for the same applications, with a free choice of the customers and the distributors to go for either material. So that's the difference of opinion. But since we received the statement of objections, we had to disclose that. It is early in the process. The discussion has just started with the authority. It is way too early to assess a possible level of risk, and of course, since this it is not possible to assess the risk, and because we believe it is totally unfounded, there is no provision in the books.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sorry for the extensive response, but it is difficult to summarize in two sentences.
No, it's very good, thanks.
Our next question comes from Tony Jones of Redburn. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Oh, good afternoon. I have four questions as well. Firstly, could you talk about what drove the reduction in other expense? I think it declined by about 27 million euros in this half, so just explain what was driving that. Also, could you provide a bit of provide a view about the confidence in the Vision 2015 return on capital target? So just maybe how should we think about getting to that, or whether it's we should be expecting a substantial decline in CapEx. Then in recycling, the guidance that you've given for EBIT in the second half, does that imply that the negative impact from hedges, price hedges falling away from a high level, is that basically washed out now, where we can just think about volume and metal prices? And then finally, in energy materials, the price pressure. I was struggling to reconcile that comment with the expectation of higher revenue. Could you provide some sort of EBIT guidance, what that impact could be in the second half? Thank you.
Tony, I guess we will have to revert to you regarding the question about other expenses.
Yeah.
So Philip will
take it up, and
we cannot respond to that question off the cuff.
Okay.
The confidence in the ROCE target, in the Vision 2015 ROCE target of exceeding 15% ROCE, is of course still there. It's a matter now of carrying out our investment projects and ramping up production and sales in the various activities. The investment hump of the past few years has been significant and is adding a lot of capital employed, and it takes a bit of time to ramp up revenues and contribution from these new investments. I have no reason to believe that the ROCE target would have to be adjusted. I see no change in market trends. Sometimes there are some delays. I mean, we discussed that earlier, that, for instance, the penetration of electrified vehicles is a bit lower than we had originally envisaged. But overall, I see no reason to modify the target or the expectation of a ROCE between 15 and 20% in the future. In recycling, it is indeed fair to assume that metal price and available capacity will be the main driver. Of course, the mix of supply is also a critical factor, but it's relatively stable, I would say, give or take a few minor modifications. It's relatively stable. And there is no, I would say, as you move into the second half of the year, there is no hedge effect that would distort the comparison to last year, or no major effect, I would say. And then the price pressure in energy materials is a continuous factor in the business, and it's been there like forever. It continues to be there. And what we wanted to mention is that the volume growth is somewhat mitigated by this price pressure when it comes to the revenue growth. The revenue growth is a bit lower than volume growth in that segment, reflecting the price pressure, in some cases the price erosion. And we expect that to continue in the second half of the year.
Great. Thanks very much. Could I just follow up with one quick question, which is on CapEx? Have you got any view on what the CapEx could look like for next year? So I think you said 220 to 250 for this year. Will it decline, I mean, or go up?
It's too early to give you precise guidance, but please bear in mind that we have a very large investment project that has just got off the ground. That's the recycling expansion in Hoboken. It's a 100 million euro CapEx project, which is going to be spread over 18 months. So in the second part of this year, and the bulk of it will be spent next year. And there are also a number of projects in catalysis with the plant construction in Poland, the new tech center in Korea, etc., that will also, and further expansion of our rechargeable battery materials activities in Asia, that will justify a continued high level of CapEx. Now, this being said, so by high level, I mean we're not in a phase where we are going to move to a CapEx equal to depreciation, or where maintenance CapEx is the guidance. Growth CapEx continues to be a major theme. But it's too early to tell what magnitude would the CapEx spend be next year.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Joe Dewhurst of UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. I'd also like to ask four questions. On the recycling business, certainly at the start of the year, there was also a lot of concern around the supply of residues, particularly from South Africa, because the impacts with the mining strikes. Do you see that, or are you expecting those residues then to start to return in the second half, or is there a lag period while the plants ramp up production there? And then on the battery materials side, some sort of feeling around where we are now as far as cost per kilowatt hour for the automotive batteries. You're effectively trying to bring the cost down, and essentially maybe how far we are off now the $200 per kilowatt hour kind of level, but also some sort of feeling as to how competitive you are, say, versus the competition. So are you more advanced than the competition in that sort of technology race, or effectively are there certainly other providers which are pretty close to you? And then with the buybacks, are you now that you sort of cleared the treasury shares, should we expect that you'll do a similar level of buybacks now in the second half as well? And that's it. Actually, three questions. So those three questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. I will start with the first couple of questions, and then I will hand over for Philip to talk about buybacks. The situation. Regarding the South African mining operations and the residue streams has not normalized yet, despite the end of the strike. As you may have read or heard, it will take a significant number of months in order for production to be back to pre-crisis levels, to pre-strike levels. There are a number of technical difficulties that need to be overcome in order to bring the all of the operations back on stream and back to their previous levels of operation. So I would not expect the supply picture to normalize anytime soon in the very short term. It will take quite a bit more time. And by the way, if you look at the PGM prices, platinum and palladium prices, or rhodium prices in particular, they have not moved downwards when the end of the strike was announced, because the physical situation of the market has not yet normalized. So I think that's the market prices tend to confirm this situation. Concerning RBM, the battery materials, I will have to revert to you. We'll have to revert to you regarding where the industry stands in terms of dollars per kilowatt hour. I don't have a very fresh update of that figure that I could give you right now. We'll have to check that. But let me comment on the other part of your question, that's the technology position versus competition. In the automotive segment, we continue to be very well positioned with our NMC materials, the nickel manganese cobalt compounds of different grades that are being qualified for a large number of applications and models that are either already on the roads or due to hit the roads. And we continue to maintain a technological gap in terms of product performance to quite a large extent. But of course, we wait for the market to take off in more meaningful numbers in order to see all the benefits of that technological leadership position coming through. In other segments of battery materials, the picture is somewhat different. In the high-end portable electronics, where high-density lithium cobalt oxide is required to run tablets and smartphones, our position is absolutely unique in terms of technology and materials performance, and that helps us, of course, expand the business as we wait for the automotive demand to take off in more meaningful numbers. while for more standard applications and more standard products, whether it's NMCs or standard LCOs or competitive position is not equally good, and we're not prepared to enter into price wars to defend the position in the low end of these segments, whether it's for notebooks or some other applications. So we're making choices, and we focus on the high end where technology is a decisive factor in our customers' decisions. And then on the buybacks, Philip will.
So we have a mandate, the 10% buyback mandate that runs into mid-2015. So the idea is that we basically will now continue and complete the current mandate to go to the 10%, and we will ask for shareholder approval through an EGM for the cancellation. And the reason why we do the cancellation is basically it provides us with the flexibility indeed to continue a buyback program. So we don't need a new mandate. We can continue under the current mandate that runs until mid-2015. Now, buybacks is, I would say, part of the shareholder value equation together with dividends and other elements. So so we'll have to see whether we continue, but certainly with the cancellation, if approved, we will have the flexibility to continue the buybacks under the current mandate.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Junior Cugnes of Petercam. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my questions. A few from my side. First is on performance materials, where cost-cutting was quite impressive, if I may say, with REBIT up 60% despite a falling top line. Do you see a further improvement potential there? And then how do you see the construction market in general? Another question is on the financial charges. You said that the majority of the financial charges were impacted by FX, but I also saw that the recurring financial charges increased substantially. Could you give us some color why this was, and how do you see this tracking into H2? And then the third question is just want to check to be sure. You said the increased throughput in recycling could compensate for lower volumes from the downtime. Do you mean to compensate the total downtime or only the incremental from the capacity expansion? Thank you.
Okay, let me start, Junior, and then I will hand over to Philip for the question related to financial charges. In performance materials, we will continue to look at the cost picture with great care and focus. There is the potential for further cost reductions is not as massive as it was as what we have achieved so far. We have already achieved a number of significant measures or implemented a number of significant measures that have included site closures and or consolidation, optimization of the back office organization in certain other areas, etc. So there is a bit, there is continued attention to cost, and we review that on a continuous basis, but you should not extrapolate that this will continue at the pace you have seen recently. This would not be a realistic assumption. Then on recycling, what I meant by the volume assumption and throughput assumption is that since the downtime in the second part of the year was higher than than in the first part of the year, the higher throughput could help us mitigate that effect and basically match the volumes that were processed in the first half of the year. So that is, in a way, the marginal effect that I tried to describe when it comes to throughput and available capacity. And then, Philip, perhaps on the financial charges?
Yes, so on the financial charges, so as As indicated, when you look at the recurring financial charges, there is an increase mostly related to the adverse Forex result. There's also a bit of impact on discounting of provisions because of the lower interest rates in general. The actual net interest cash out is, again, is very low. The difference that I think you referred to is between the total and the recurring is related to IFRS 39 impacts. So you know that's a non-cash transactional impact, which also relate to Forex results. But that is 2 million euros.
All right, thanks.
Our next question comes from Dennis Lepetitu of Kempen. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Good afternoon. I also have three or four questions, if I may. And the first one is related to performance materials. I noticed that the main recovery in that segment is related to the equity-related income. So I was wondering if you believe that that performance, which I assume is mainly connected to Element 6 abrasives, is something which is sustainable and something that we could extrapolate for the second half and for next year. Two questions related to the expansion of Hoboken. In the press release, you mentioned that there are you're still in discussion with local stakeholder to address remaining questions. My question is there any other permit that you still have to receive, or what do you exactly mean with that sentence? And secondly, regarding the timing of the maintenance for this year, I'm not sure if I understood correctly if the longer maintenance already took place, or is it taking place in Q3, or it already partially took place in Q2. And thirdly, I wanted to ask you about the change in the platform mix in North America. As in Q1, you have mentioned that sales have been growing broadly in line with the market, and now that situation has deteriorated. So the question is, did you witness any significant platform changes in the meantime, or it's just related to more depressed sales of existing platforms that you are exposed to and the actual platform exposure did not change?
Okay, Dennis, good afternoon. Let me start with the questions in reverse order. So the platform mix in the U.S. has not changed, but the models on which we're qualified have been selling have not been selling as well as earlier this year. So it's, the mix is not changing. It's just less. It has just become less supportive. The downtime in the maintenance shutdown in Hoboken is taking place in the third quarter of this year. In the third quarter, so early in the summer month of this year, to be indeed more precise. And then regarding the permit, we do not require any other permit, so otherwise we wouldn't have been able to start the investment-related work. Some of the stakeholders and have raised a number of questions and concerns. And concerns, some of them relate to noise, for instance, noise levels. And we are working with them and also with the other industries that are located on that site and which also have industrial activities that may generate noise to see how the concerns of the neighbors can be addressed. But that's nothing out of the ordinary and nothing that would or could delay the expansion investment work. And then on performance materials, I must admit that I have not made note of the question, and I would you please repeat it?
Yeah, no problem. I noticed that the main recovery, looking at total rebit for the division, is actually coming from the equity line, from the income from associates, basically. And I was just wondering if that is sustainable, because it has shown quite a bit of a jump versus what was reported in the previous 1 or 2 years. And I'm just wondering if that's sustainable, because it was like 9.4 million versus 4 million in H1 2013.
Yep. Yes, it is indeed the result of sustainable improvements that have been made and significant changes that have been made to the production configuration in Element 6 Abrasives. So that's probably out of the performance materials activities, the one that has gone through the most significant restructuring in the past, let's say, 12 to 24 months. And we now see the benefits of that restructuring coming through, with the next step being, as I mentioned, the intended closure of the Swedish plant and the consolidation of production into two sites in South Africa and in Ireland. So in terms of cost reductions, it is indeed a sustainable improvement. Now, on the revenue side, you may also have noted that the picture of Element 6, at Element 6 has also improved in the first part of this year, with better demand, with market share gains in some applications. So that, of course, remains subject to the market developments and demand trends in these various applications. So the sustainability aspect of that is somewhat more relative. And also I would like to draw your attention to the fact that like other activities of performance materials, there is a little bit of seasonality to be taken into account. And so you should not fully extrapolate H1 into H2.
Okay, that's very clear. And maybe just one follow-up. Would you be able to indicate how much longer would be the maintenance period in Q3 relatively to a normal maintenance period?
Well, I could, but we're not willing to disclose that information, unfortunately, so I cannot tell you, Dennis.
Okay, no problem. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Adam Collins of Liberum. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. I think I've got four still too. So first of all, just for the record, could you tell us what the FX impact on revenues and recurring EBIT was on a year-over-year basis? The second one and the third actually relate to the trends in recycling. In the statement, you're alluding to a more favorable trend observed towards the end of the period in some categories. I wondered if you just could expand on that. From what you were saying earlier, it doesn't appear as if one of those improving categories yet is the South African PGM industry. So where are the improvements being seen? You also say in the same area that there's been a deterioration in availability of complex e-scrap. I think you alluded to that in previous quarters. Just trying to understand to what extent that's about the fact that your competitors are adding capacity, or is that more of a general statement about diminished availability across the industry, something connected perhaps with the enforcement of the WEEE directive? So is it an industry problem or specifically because of more competition? And then just finally, trying to understand where we are in the ramp-up process for both the French and Chinese HDD plants. And I wondered if you could sort of say where you expect the run rate to be in terms of volume at the end of 14 compared to where it was at the mid-year stage, just to give us a sense of how much more improvement in volumes to come here as you reach full capacity in those two projects.
Okay, Adam, I will let Philip start.
Forex? Yeah, so Adam, for the Forex, we estimate, I give you an estimate on the recurring EBIT. We estimate basically the impact year over year, the a low double-digit number, so meaning something close to 10, but a bit higher than 10. If we look at the what's behind that, it's obviously dollar, as you know, but I would say even more important are currencies like Brazilian real, South African rand. So there's a number of currencies into play here, but so low double-digit number on recurring EBIT.
Korean won.
And Korean won. Thank you, Mark. Korean won, indeed. Now, that is the direct impact, and obviously there's indirect impact in terms of competitiveness, but that's not included here, obviously.
Okay, that helps. Thanks.
Adam, let me comment on the other questions. As I mentioned on previous occasions, it's difficult to comment on every quarter on the supply mix evolution because it's not changing drastically from one quarter to the other. So we see some minor adjustments to the mix taking place in the first quarter or in the second quarter of this year. One fact is indeed, as you pointed out and as I mentioned earlier, that the PGM-rich residues from the mining industry are not yet back to a normalized level. So this is not the improvement that was observed in the second quarter. The improvement that we saw was that some of the existing supply streams from the industry, some types of industrial byproducts, were becoming slightly more abundant, and so pricing conditions have improved a little bit on those. I mean, volumes are anyway constrained as long as we don't have the additional capacity on stream. So we're not looking for volume or select the best margin materials. So there have been some improvements there in some categories of industrial byproducts, but unfortunately not yet the PGM-rich materials. In terms of end-of-life products, the situation in spent catalyst remains the same as far as we're concerned. So the segment has become highly competitive, as I explained last time, and I think also on occasions because of the additional or the new interest that some other players have put in or now in spent automotive catalysts. So pricing conditions have deteriorated significantly. And in terms of the e-scrap, it is really a matter of industry availability. The competitive picture has not changed. And actually, the competitive picture as pressure doesn't have a big impact on the complex, the most complex e-scrap. And the additional capacity that you have referred to in Europe is not capable of treating the same complexity or the same or equally complex material we are treating in Hoboken. So the competitive picture is not changing, but the availability remains a little bit erratic, and the WEEE implementation remains imperfect to see. Coming back to the HDD business, the ramp-up is gradual. So in China, you will not see much of that coming through the numbers in the remainder of this year. It will be relatively small and not so material, so it's more a matter of 20. While for the French facility, we should reach a relatively high degree of capacity utilization by the year for the first two lines, while the third line, which is currently being installed, will ramp up production next year.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Christian Stiefel of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have three questions. The first one on rechargeable battery materials. So you were indicating some pricing pressure in your NMC cathode materials for the automotive battery market, given oversupply at battery cell customers. Can you provide maybe a little bit more color here so to understand the oversupply situation moving into the second half? And also related to the business unit itself, would you say that the majority of growth here is still coming from the lithium cobalt cells in high-end electronics or from the automotive MNC cathode materials part? The second question I have is on the PGM metal situation. Are you now strategically hedging again at these levels, or are you still leaving that aside? And my last question is a more technical one. If you could give us some guidance on full-year DNA, that would be much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Uh, Christian, let me start with the questions regarding battery materials and explain indeed what we meant with the price pressure in the automotive segment. While I mentioned that we have a very strong technology position in that segment as far as cathode materials are concerned, what we see is that our customers, the battery makers, are fighting like hell to win contract and to win new platforms at the OEMs and go quite low into pricing of batteries in order to get these contracts. So they apply preemptive pricing strategies to get these contracts. But of course, once they have won the contracts, they have to make the batteries, and the low prices that they offer to their customers mean that they end up putting a lot of pressure on their suppliers to try and avoid their margins to be squeezed to a level that would be totally unbearable or unsustainable. And so the whole supply chain gets under pressure in order to meet these type of commitments. I think this is typical of an application where costs has to come down in order to make the application affordable in the absence of scale effects, and should normalize once indeed the scale effects can be attained. This being said, in the meanwhile, the volume growth in the battery materials comes mostly indeed from portable electronics. The demand from the automotive applications, while growing steadily, remains modest in absolute terms because we're starting from very low levels. And indeed, the high-density lithium cobalt oxide demand is today still the main engine for growth, and I expect that to be the case for still a number of months, if not quarters. And then I will hand
hedging
over to Philip.
Yes, so on the hedging, as you know, we have a number of metal in our hedging portfolio. You see also from the note in the annual report that includes PGMs. There's no fundamental change or no material change in our current hedge book, I would say. So we do have hedges for this year, for next year. It includes a number of metals, including some PGMs, but nothing significant in terms of change in the hedge book that we would want to signal. And then on the full year, I think the last question was full year D&A, if I understood it correctly. Yeah? So on the full year D&A, I would say we need to give a guidance. I would say full year D&A, 170 million euros. But again, it depends a bit on when the installations exactly are commissioned and when they start producing, but 170 I would give as a guidance.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
Our next question comes from Philip Depaul of ING. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon, Mark and Philip. Two questions from my side. The first question is on the performance materials division. There was already a question on the margins, and I think we all understand that room to reduce costs further is becoming more limited. My question is it a fair assumption that there's quite a degree of operational leverage in that segment, meaning that if and when volumes recover, there is still quite some room for higher margin in the segment? And then the second question is on working capital. It was quite a good performance in the first half of this year. Part of that is due to working capital. And my question is there an effect in there from lower metal prices? And if yes, to what extent could we see some reversal of that in the second half of this year? And those are my questions.
Philip, I have to say that the operating leverage is somewhat lower in performance materials than it is in some other divisions, because we don't have such a high level of fixed R&D costs or costs for the new developments, new projects, startup costs, etc. So I would say the operational leverage is somewhat lower. There is one. And on the other side, we do not bank on a dramatic changes in volumes. I mean, this is a business area that does not offer huge growth opportunities. I mean, it's most of these businesses within performance materials typically move in line with GDP. So there could be some further improvement in margins coming from volume improvements and further cost reductions, but it's not. You should not assume that this would be massive.
Okay.
As far as working capital is concerned,
yeah,
Philip?
No, you're right to highlight, indeed, that the first half year we had quite a release of working capital. Now, that's, as always, that's a mix of different factors. Huh? You have some price effects, volume effects, so it's always a mix. But I would say, a bit like in CapEx, the first half year free cash flow indeed was relatively high. So we do expect for the second half of the year indeed a lower free cash flow, because on the one hand we'll have the higher CapEx, and on the other hand we do expect an increase in the working capital, again due to obviously the price of the metals, but also some volume effect. So second half of the year we do expect an increase in working capital.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Edward Donoghue from One Investments. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Hopefully a couple of questions from my side. One thing I just wanted a better understanding was looking at the catalysis unit, to have an understanding what's going on with regard to your position in North America and in Europe, looking at the auto volumes in the industry, and which are roughly 5% in both areas, and yourselves flat. Can you give some understanding what's actually going on and what could reverse that? And then just looking at slide 11, there's been a constant growth in revenues, and unfortunately the rebit seems to be going the opposite direction. Again, what could be reversing that trend?
Can you repeat the second part of the question?
If you look at slide 11, you have your revenues continually growing, and if we actually look at rebit, it's actually on a downward path, and I'm trying to get an understanding of what's going to reverse that, bearing in mind that you still seem to be lagging with regard to industry volumes, and there is certain discussions with regard to a slight slowing of auto demand full stop into the second half and potentially for next year.
So that's regarding catalysis?
Yeah.
Okay, and let me start with the second part of the question. In catalysis, you have two business units. You have a larger business that is evolving positively, both in terms of revenue and recurring EBIT, and you have a relatively smaller precious metals chemistry activity that makes precious metals-based compounds that are used in automotive catalysts, that are used chemical catalyst applications in life science and other chemical applications. And revenues and the recurring EBIT of that activity were substantially down. So that's not related to the emission control part of the catalyst. And hopefully some of that is of a temporary nature. Part of it is related to the weakness of the Brazilian economy. We have a presence of that precious metals chemistry business, and clearly the economic downturn there has done any good to that small. Now coming back to the sales trends in catalysis. It is somewhat uncomfortable to have to comment on quarterly or half-yearly trends because you have short-term moves that in one direction that are going into the other direction the quarter. In a way, once you're qualified for a certain engine platform, your volumes will depend on how that platform market. And of course, like any global player, we have a complete portfolio of customers that we serve, and better than the market if these models that maybe don't sell better than the market average. In some other cases, on some other times, we move in line with the market, and in some cases, not as good as the market. But that tends to change. If you look at the trend, though, in the long term, the market positions stay relatively unchanged in the passenger car segment, and this is what matters most to us, because in a way, when you qualify for a platform, you have it for the lifetime of the platform, which is 3 to 5 years, and in the meantime, there isn't much you can do to help the platform sell better than the average market. So that's the generic explanation. Now, in Europe, we have some of these temporary effects, there is, in particular, some new Euro 6 contracts that we have in the pocket that will kick in the second part of the year and will rebalance our mix and help us grow a bit faster than the next time. So again, number of temporary effects, and in the past several years, I've had the privilege that I could, and the comfortable position that I could comment on Umicore growing faster than the market. And in the past couple of quarters, it was the other way around. And next year, I will again tell you that we are in line or fast or growing faster than the market.
Okay, and if I may ask another question, it's on Hoboken. I just need an understanding of next year, now that you're going to go into the actual physical implementation of the upgrade program, how do you shoehorn an upgrade program into a maintenance period when you're doing the maintenance as well? Should we either see longer maintenance periods to allow you to do both activities, or do we see more maintenance periods than normal? Not being an engineer, and I apologize at all, how one conceptually sees that?
Well, the idea, because we don't want to disturb the operations too much and we don't want to lose too much volume, the idea is indeed to carry out the major pieces of the investment project while the facility is down anyway for maintenance. If need be, we extend a bit the regular maintenance timeline so that we have time for both the regular maintenance operations and the additional investment works. Although in most cases they run simultaneously, and it's not that we have to double the maintenance downtime. It's some additional days, sometimes a week or two, additional time for the investment project, but really these work simultaneously. And it requires, of course, in order to be able to carry out maintenance and investment simultaneously in such a complex facility, you have months of engineering and planning work that are required in order to do that properly, and during the downtime, you see hundreds of people on the site doing the construction or the maintenance or the modification work. So it's quite impressive.
Okay, and my final question, and I apologize if this appears rather pedantic, but looking at consensus prior to today was roughly around about 266 million. Your new guidance, if the market follows the same mid-path, is roughly 272. That would imply H2 lower than H1, or am I missing something?
No, you're not missing anything. We typically have some seasonality effects in certain units, and that is the case in performance materials and energy materials in particular. And so that's the factor that has to be added to the equation to make the figures work.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Evgenia Molotova from Berenberg. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. Thanks a lot for taking my questions. I have several. The first one is on first two, actually, on catalysis. In HTD, do you expect to be break-even for the full year? Or because of the first half, you will still expect to have negative EBIT in this division? Second, in light duty, as far as I understand, the mix deterioration is caused by the fact that there are less, large engine size vehicles being sold in both Europe and US. So where is your confidence coming from that this trend will reverse? And then the question on the 15% ROCE target by 2015, does it, because 2015 is the next year and you will still have quite sizable capex and Hoboken will not yet be working at full capacity, so do you assume further improvements in metal prices to reach to this target or not? I think this is basically... yes, and the last one on the rechargeable battery, I'm very sorry. In electronics, at the beginning, cathode materials was also very profitable stream, and then because of the competition between the producers and the high commoditization rate, it became much less profitable. So it seems like competition between battery suppliers in EV is now also improving. So what gives you confidence that it will not follow the same destiny as electronic materials? Thank you.
Evgenia, I don't remember having said that HDD was negative in the first part of the year.
No, you didn't. It's my assumption.
Sorry?
You didn't. It's my assumption.
Yeah, but that's what I wanted to clarify, that because it sounded from the question that this was a given, which it is not. So it's your assumption. And since I did not comment on the rebit of or the EBIT performance or contribution of HDD in the past, I'm not going to start now. So suffice to say, as I've mentioned in recent communications, that the contribution both to the bottom line and top line from the HDD ramp up will start to be visible in the second part of the year, and will be far more meaningful in 2015. In line with the rate at which we add capacity and ramp it up. In LDD, it is really the fact that we have, and I would say regardless of the sales trends which you described about the market, it is really the fact that we have a number of new contracts for platforms that we didn't have in the past or in the recent past that gives me the confidence that or a passenger car position in Europe will improve and or growth will resume in that region.
And North America? Sorry, just a question.
Sorry?
And in North America?
Well, the passenger car diesel business in North America is relatively
modest. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do you expect, because you said that the mix deteriorated in North America as well, so do you expect this trend to reverse going forward?
I don't have a clear view on that because while in Europe, as I mentioned, this is my confidence and my view is based on the contract effects on the mix. In America, I don't see major changes in contracts, and so it will depend on how the vehicles that we serve do sell in the marketplace. And as far as the return on capital employed is concerned, for 2015, I think it's too early to provide guidance as to the profitability of our operations next year. Suffice to say that for the medium term, indeed, my confidence remains that we should achieve more than 15% ROCE. Whether it's already going to be the case in 2015, I think will be commented a bit later, once we have sufficient visibility to do that. And then,
do you expect some to go there? Do you expect some improvement in metal prices, or you think that even at current metal prices, you can achieve this level of returns?
Okay. Sorry, I missed that part of the question. We do not bank on higher metal prices to achieve a 15% return on capital employed. This should be achievable with the investments that we have made in the recent times and the positions that that will offer us in certain segments like HDD, battery materials, etc., and the expansion of the recycling activities. So we're not banking on a metal price improvement in order to get there. And so if metal prices do improve, that would be an additional cherry on the cake.
Yes.
And then your question about RBM, as you are pointing out, this is a business that is moving very fast, sometimes from high-tech to commoditization. So there is a constant need of developing new products, new technologies, and constant need for investment. We see indeed pressure now in price pressure in the automotive segment for the reasons I mentioned, but this is not related to a commoditization, it is to the contrary related to the introduction of these new very expensive technologies in the market, and the fact is that they are their price today makes them not so competitive compared to combustion engines. I mean, electrified cars are more expensive than combustion engines and than cars with combustion engines. Therefore, they are not necessarily affordable to the to all consumers. So there is still quite an effort to be done in order to get there. Now, in terms of technology, we're not following a commoditization trend in automotive applications because there is still a lot of work to be done to make the batteries more efficient or to increase the performance of the batteries, and that requires new material technologies to improve the energy density, to improve the power density, as the case may be. So there is still a lot of research and development work ongoing. And what will really be a significant driver in margins in that respect will be the volumes and the scale effects that can be reached. You need to reach scale to absorb these very significant development costs and startup costs for new technologies.
Thanks a lot. Very clear.
Our next question comes from Mutlu Gundogan of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you for taking my follow-up questions. First on automotive catalysts, on HDD. If I remember correctly, you had said that you had expect this to become break-even at year-end. You now expect this to contribute already in the second half. Can you tell us what has changed or what has driven this positive development? Is that a certain region that's doing better? It seemed that you were alluding to France. A bit more color would be helpful. Second, on precious metals chemistry, you talk about the startup costs related to the new facility in Tulsa. Can you tell us if that is a large part that explains the decline in earnings, or is it just minor? And then finally, on precious metals refining, the preparatory work you talked about at the Q1 results and the testing work that had impacted the volumes. Can you tell us how you are coping with that? Are you able to better cope with that than you were in the first quarter? So what I'm actually getting at is, has the negative impact of that on volumes differed from the second quarter versus the first quarter?
Okay, Mutlu, I don't recall having commented that precisely on HDD break-even time, so I cannot answer your question about what has changed, because I don't think I've changed my views and remarks in that respect. For PMC, for precious metals chemistry, the main impacts degradation in the results is the economic downturn in Brazil, and to a lesser extent, the startup cost of the new facility in Tulsa. So the main factor is the Brazilian economy and the impact it has on it has had on our operations there. And then the regarding the engineering and testing work, it's difficult to compare H1 and H2 in that respect because, in a way, we're now in the heart of the matter and are in execution phase, have moved into execution phase of the expansion project, while in the first part of the year we were not, and so this was really the engineering and testing work has interfered with production, while now we conduct the investments during the downtime, as I mentioned earlier. So it's really difficult to compare. And again, what I can say is that we hope that the throughput improvements that the modifications are supposed to bring after we restart the facility in the summer will help us to make up for some of the lost volumes because of the extended downtime.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Oliver Reif of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks. Just one question for me to clarify an earlier answer. Can I ask if you have any greater visibility on the likely size or impact of the maintenance required to have Oken in 2015 relative to what you're doing in 2014? Thanks.
Oliver, unfortunately, it's too early to tell because, like for the volume or the capacity questions, I have to figure out how the facility performs after we restarted and considering the modifications that we are doing now, and because that will determine the timing of the next maintenance shutdown, so it's really too early to tell the timing and the duration, sorry, of the next maintenance shutdown. I'm afraid I can't.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Wim Hoste of KBC Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions for me. First, your thoughts on the buyback continuation and the cancelling of shares. I previously assumed that the large treasury share portion could at some point be used maybe for an acquisition. Has your thoughts on acquisition changed now that you made a decision to cancel a large part of your treasury shares? That's the first one. And the second question is on energy materials. First quarter revenue was up pretty big, over 20%. First half revenue was up 12%, suggesting a lesser second quarter performance. Could you maybe clarify what is behind the difference in trends? Is it the erratic order patterns you sometimes refer to in rechargeable battery materials, or are there other elements explaining the big difference in top line performance in first and second quarter? Thanks.
Okay, Wim, on the buybacks, nothing really has changed. I mean, you're right that we always mentioned that the treasury shares can potentially be used to fund an acquisition. We're close to the 10%, so I think it's fair that we give an indication of what we will do with the treasury shares, and so we'll go for the cancellation. If one day there would be an opportunity, a very sizable opportunity that would require us to raise capital, I think we have the access to the capital market to do that. So we're not really relying on those shares. And obviously today this is not on the agenda. So no real news. It's just that we're reaching the 10%. As mentioned, we want to create the flexibility to continue with the buybacks, and that's why we go for the cancellation.
Okay, and let me then talk about the energy materials growth patterns. It is somewhat erratic indeed, but I have to say that Q1 was exceptionally high in terms of growth because normally there is a seasonal downturn in demand for battery materials for cathodes in the first quarter of the year. So that's the trends or the patterns we have seen in prior years and which we have not seen this time around. So the Q1 levels were very high relative to Q1 of 2013. So that's the main reason why you have this difference in growth patterns between Q1 and Q2.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Our final question today comes from Dennis Lapadou of Kempen. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I only have one follow-up question. I was wondering if you could give some indication whatsoever, based on what you know now and based on your base case for the expansion work to be undertaken at Hoboken, if we can see, given current metal prices, any increase in recycling profits in 2015? Taking into account the throughput, the potential throughput improvement.
I think that although I don't like to comment on 2015 figures, if you extrapolate what I said about the fact that we expect throughput improvements from the modifications that we are doing today, and considering that in the first half we had some constrained capacity. For the reasons that were also discussed. Indeed, if you extrapolate that, you should be able, if all goes well, to process more volumes on a full-year basis in 2015 compared to this year. And if metal prices stay where they are, that should look good.
Okay, thank you very much.
But I'm doing your work now. Analyzing the trends and comments. Okay. Good. So at this stage, I understand we have no other questions in the queue. Is that correct, Eva?
That is correct. We've no further questions at this time in the queue.
So very good. At this stage, then, I would like to close the call and thank you all for your participation and active questioning. Of course, as usual, if you have follow-on questions, please feel free to get in touch with our investor relations team, and we'll have the chance of meeting in the coming days, Philippe and I, with most of you, I believe, in Brussels or in London, and we look forward to continuing these discussions on that occasion. So thank you, have a nice rest of the day, and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.